Palmerston North New Zealand again for the Austin Morris New Zealand podcasts. And as ever, we are talking to our resident philosopher, musician, producer, teacher, Mark Patterson. Good morning, Mark.
Hi, Dave. How are you going?
Good. Mark, today I have chosen a topic, which is a bit of a rarity. I had a bright idea, and I thought that we might...
It's not that rare, Dave.
I thought we might talk about happiness today. So the title of today's talk is Happiness, It's a Bit of a Laugh.
Cheers.
What's your reaction to that? Is happiness a bit of a laugh, or is it a bit of a serious matter?
Maybe both, eh? If you look for happiness too seriously, then you're never going to find it, are you? So happiness is a bit of an industry, and there are people that promise it if you give them $99. But yeah, can be a laugh, can not be a laugh.
Yeah, there is potential for people to take money off you and make you unhappy, aren't there, in the pursuit of happiness?
Yeah, and I, of course it depends what you mean by happiness, as different people would have different definitions of it. Some people would see happiness as being goal fulfillment or goal achievement. Other people will see it as something that comes from their inner self, and if only they could be better with their inner selves, they would be happier. And
it's an interesting point you've made there. I mean, I suspect you're making a distinction between being active in achieving happiness and sort of being a passive recipient of something that makes you happy.
Sure, and perhaps sometimes if you actively pursue something, if you make happiness a goal, then you are doing something that is not making you happy. Maybe happiness only exists when you can just sit and receive it or feel it.
Yeah, it's almost a picture of modern life. I mean, as you're talking, I sort of have this picture of ascetic people rather as opposed to aesthetic people.
Yeah,
good. Who are sort of diligently practicing yoga or hot yoga or sprinting up hills or...
Yeah, well, I was thinking, is that one of the things that makes people different from animals, is that they can experience happiness? I mean, I suppose you can see a dog wagging its tail and chasing a ball as being happy, but I think, and maybe a cat curled up in a ball sleeping on the couch is happy, but I don't think they have the happiness in the same way that humans do. I think it's a bit like humour. It might be something that is innate to humans.
Yeah, although dogs would probably argue with that when you see them sort of inducing another dog to play with them and sprinting around and running in circles and...
You're right. You're right. I agree. So do dogs become happy when they've got certain needs met? And is it easier for a dog to be happy than a human?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a series of... And I know we're digressing and down a strange alley here, but I've seen a few video clips of dogs, you know, reunited with their owners or whatever after they've left, you know, gone astray and so forth, and the sort of dog is embracing the master or the mistress with a big hug and what seems to be a smile on their face, but I don't know.
Yeah, is happiness and humour, do they go together? Can you have one without the other?
Well, if you make someone laugh, if something is humorous, it does raise your level of happiness, doesn't it?
I've never really thought too much about the difference between them, but just asking me those questions, I've wondered, and somebody said to me once that where there's humour, there's not conflict. And so in that sense, happiness and humour might go together.
Yeah. I've got a very brief joke to tell you that maybe illustrates what we're talking about. So the joke is, what makes a country and western singer happy?
No, please tell me.
All right. Playing their records backwards so that they get their dog back, they get their long lost love back, they're back on the family farm, etc.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that happen when you play records backwards. Probably damaging the needle is the most important one.
Now, you talked about definitions of happiness and there being multiplicity. So just to be a bit technical for a minute, I went to the 1933 Oxford Dictionary and found out that happiness was a word that arose in English in 1530.
Right. That's interesting.
Yes, yeah, it is. And that so maybe people weren't happy before then. I don't know. I don't know what word they used. And then there is a 1591 definition, which, you know, probably carries the way today too, which is the state of pleasurable content of mind which results from success or the attainment of what is considered good.
Yeah, so that's definitely a goal-oriented definition, isn't it?
Yeah, it is actually. It's an active sort of a thing that they're talking about there.
And I would say that that's quite a narrow definition, actually, because sure, there are people that are happy once they complete a goal, but there are other people that are happy without completing a goal. There are people that are happy just sitting on the couch watching the TV.
And thank goodness for that. Yeah, I mean, who wants to be goal-oriented all the time? Yeah. And so, look, maybe if I throw in a few synonyms, because it is quite a hard word to define. I mean, we sort of think we know what happiness is. Yeah, everyone knows what everyone's talking about. Mm-hmm. So just – and I don't really think any of these words fully capture it, but here we go. It's a bit of a big list. Yeah. Bliss, contentment, delight, elation, enjoyment, euphoria, exhilaration, glee, joy, jubilation, laughter, optimism, peace of mind, pleasure, prosperity, well-being.
Well, that certainly runs the gamut, doesn't it? From something that might be a very low-key version of happiness to something that's like an active version of happiness.
Yeah, I think we keep on coming back to those two things, the active and the passive.
Mm. Yeah. I wonder if people have been surprised at the level of happiness that they found in the last 4 weeks.
Good question, and that was something I wanted to talk to you about today. So do you have a measure, let's say on a scale of 0 to 10, How would you measure your state of happiness over the past 4 weeks of lockdown in New Zealand, which we've just come out of now?
Well, I surprised myself. I'd be in the upper range there. I'd be in the 7, 8, 9s, definitely. And I wouldn't have expected that if someone had said to me, you know, 3 months ago, you're going to be stuck at home for 4, 5, 6 weeks, I'd go, what? But actually, given that everybody's stuck at home, I think people are surprisingly happy. I think the extroverts are doing it a bit hard. I've followed a few extroverts on social media, and I can see that some of them are just straining at the leash to have some social contact, some real social contact. But yeah. I think for other people I've talked to, are really quite happy with the way things are going. They're not spending any money. They have, as long as you've got your needs met, you know, you've got a roof over your head, you've got some intellectual entertainment, you've got some food, perhaps having someone else in your bubble is good.
Yeah. So just looking at the other side of the coin, Mark, what are the things that you haven't missed that you might have thought you would have missed and that you would have thought contributed to your happiness before this?
Well, we spend a heck of a lot of time travelling. Even in a little town, we're constantly travelling from one place to another. So it's nice not to have that pressure of having to be on one side of town and then on the other side of town. It's nice knowing that you've got a pantry full of food and you can select what to make without going to the supermarket and buying something that's ready made. That's actually quite nice.
Right, yeah. I've got to say that the traffic noise is one of the things that has really struck me. So we had 4 weeks of lockdown in New Zealand, and oftentimes I would look down our street, which is a lovely tree-lined street, fairly short, and there'd be nothing going on whatsoever.
Yeah.
A couple of cars may be parked on the roadside and maybe one man and a dog down the road, if anyone. And that sort of quietness. But once, a couple of days ago, the country was opened up to level three, which is not a huge opening up, but it allows for more travel to work and people to join a bubble with one other household. It just seems so much noisier.
Yeah, that's right. So you've enjoyed the quiet.
Yes. Yeah, I have. And I've sort of come to reflect the obvious, how much the motor car dominates our lives.
I do notice that when I've been out for a walk, I've noticed nature a lot more than I usually do. I kind of looked at the trees and looked at the grass and looked at the animals and the fields. And, I do seem to have had a heightened sense of perception.
Yeah, interesting.
I was wondering if this might be a little bit deep, but we're programmed to always be looking to make things better. Like we want to have a better car and have a better house and earn more money and get a better job and have our kids do better than us. And that kind of capitalist view of everything has to be expanding, and maybe this bubble time has given us a chance to see that things don't have to be expanding all the time. And if you look back, I think there have been times in history where the economy hasn't grown; it's just been stable from one year to the next, and yet people were going about their daily lives without this added stress of an expanding economy. So maybe that's something that will come out of this.
We have been gradually imbued with the thought that, yeah, there has to be growth, there has to be improvement. And it seems to me, anyway, that it's almost impossible for things just to keep on growing in an economic productive sort of a sense.
Yeah, I love watching documentary channel where they have big factories and big machines and things like that. And one of the programs recently was about the Volkswagen factory in Germany that produces 850,000 cars a year.
Goodness.
And I was thinking, gosh, does Europe, because mostly they'd be going to Europe, wouldn't they? Does Europe really need 850,000 cars a year? What happens to the old ones? You know, do they not last very long? Is it like donuts? They get eaten. And it did cause me to think a little bit. And I thought about something else even closer to home, and that was looking at some of those jet boats on the Shotover River and the helicopters flying up the glaciers, and I was thinking, is that really necessary? Do the people partaking in that, is that an essential part of their happiness?
There is an annual happiness report, which is compiled by the UN, Seemingly the most recent one, I think, 2019, had the Nordic countries. And I know that you're a bit of a student of Norway, so you'll be interested to know that the top five countries in terms of happiness were Finland first, Denmark, Norway, Iceland, and then the Netherlands.
Interesting, eh? Interesting countries with a strong socially democratic systems.
There's a phrase here which addresses potentially what could be the inequalities and the ills which pervade the world to a degree. And that is the declaration that we can no longer privatise profit and socialise loss.
That's great, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
I couldn't say anything better than that.
That's pretty cutting, all right. And yeah. And that leads on to the concept of a universal basic income. Now, it's been suggested that it would be, as you put it just before, tinkering around the edges to talk about that in New Zealand or Australasia or whatever, without seeking to look at the situation in countries that are desperately poor.
Mm. It's an interesting concept, that new BI, because It does have some supporters on both sides of the fence. But if you have a left and right side of the political spectrum, it comes both sides of it see benefits in it, and neither side is really been prepared to analyse the losses associated with it.
If we go with the facts, and hopefully these are not distorted, a Credit Suisse, which is a bank, I understand, conducted a report in 2018, a global wealth report, and that report found that 10% of the world's richest own 85% of its wealth. So one would think that there is plenty of room there for a universal basic income, even if there's a moderate redistribution of the world's resources and wealth.
I suppose that would depend on whereabouts that redistribution was coming from. If the universal basic income was coming from the 85%, then sure, that's a redistribution, but I don't know that that would be the case.
No. Well, the statement made was that if the top 1,000 corporations in the world were fairly taxed, and I understand that's a debatable word, fairly, it would allow for a modest UBI to be tightly and reasonably dispensed in countries across the world.
I completely agree with that. That would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, the COVID lockdown has given us a chance to think about that. And implicitly we're talking about, I suppose, life and death, but also our topic, happiness, for other parts of the world. We've sort of, a thing that's come to me in isolation, and hopefully it's not just in isolation, is that we can't. It's not moral to say I'm all right, Jack, and the rest of the world can please themselves.
No, that's right. And certainly, we've seen a bit more of community spirit going on, haven't we?
Most definitely. Yeah, I think there's more of a giving aspect to the thought and the things that have been touted on the internet. Speaking of the internet, Mark. Does the internet make one happy?
Well, we wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for the internet. That's what those funny rumbling sounds are in the background. if anybody's wondering. Does it make you happy? It depends what you want from it, doesn't it? If you depend on having so many likes on your Instagram account for your self-worth, then yes, it does. But is that a good way of being happy? Probably not.
It calls into question. I mean, it seems the facts are that more young people are choosing to live on their own for an extended period, and maybe their companion in a lot of cases is the internet and their ability to reach out to the world.
Yeah, I'd see that. I'd see that as being probably a negative aspect to it.
Yeah, well, there are studies, it might surprise you, that suggest the opposite. So there's a fellow, a professor of sociology at New York University, Eric Kleinberg, and he's written a book based on a study of his called Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone.
Yeah.
And he found a lot of positives for that, particularly in big cities where it was, you know, much easier to get out into the public realm.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also suggesting that living solo could result in people being more likely to eat out, exercise, attend extracurricular things, public events, lectures, and to volunteer in different
areas.
Yeah,
sure. Yep. So there are benefits to it.
I would have thought the stereotype was, well, people have got to be in a relationship or got to be within a family unit to be happy, you know, and these poor single people are, you know, somehow deprived.
Yeah. So I see what you're saying is that the internet provides a level of interaction that wasn't available before.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, I think so. There's a lot more of the world in play. People are not just, All right. Now, I've got a note here about narcissism, and I don't know whether that's how that can be related to happiness, but I suppose there's a certain amount of self-centeredness and narcissism in all of us, is there not?
I guess so. I wasn't so much thinking about narcissism, I was thinking about psychopaths. And psychopaths are reputed to be amongst the happiest people because they're never brought down by other people. They don't care about other people, so they can only care about themselves.
That's a very interesting slant on it, which is typical of you, I suppose. that's right. So happiness is sort of touted as a positive thing, but that's well and truly putting it in a fairly disturbing realm, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? I suppose maybe, I'm not an expert, but I think maybe psychopaths, perhaps their happiness is defined as a lack of unhappiness, because no matter what they do, they are doing it for their own needs, and they don't care if anybody else is getting in the way of it.
Yeah, and they're happy making others unhappy.
Possibly, yeah. Well, yeah. It's like that great quote about neurotics and depressives. We're getting to the inverse of happiness at the moment. But depressives make themselves unhappy and neurotics make everybody else unhappy. So.
All right. Well, you know, this may sound as though we're staying in the obverse of happiness, but I wonder about that. And this is the concept of melancholia, mm-hmm. or melancholy. I don't know which is the correct or whether they're interchangeable. But melancholia defined as a mental condition characterized by extreme depression, bodily complaints, and sometimes hallucinations and delusions was a concept from ancient medicine, but it's sort of been redefined over time to mean something that's, you know, wistful and has the potential to actually make one happy, if one wants to be paradoxical about it.
I guess so. Some people are naturally melancholic, and the phrase is glass half empty rather than glass half full. So being a there is quite a lot of writing about how melancholia fuels creativity.
Right. And
I'm pretty sure if you look at a list of the top whatever songs of the last century, you'll find that songs about unhappiness and depression are probably more there than you would expect, and it would certainly be more than uplifting songs of light and love.
And do we get a lot of joy out of these melancholic songs?
Well, perhaps there's a perhaps it is when you write a song, you're looking for a an emotional resonance with the people that are listening to it, and perhaps it's easier to make that emotional resonance with a melancholic song than with a upbeat Eurovision type song.
Yeah. There certainly is, you know, after the ancient times where there was a fairly severe meaning to melancholia, you know, there are numerous examples of, say, an artist like Van Gogh who, you know, was affected by melancholy.
Yeah, certainly my feeling is that depression, bad feelings, melancholia can be a fertile place for artists to be.
That's a fairly positive take on a
on a negative subject.
Yeah. On a surprisingly negative subject, yes.
Yeah, every cloud has a silver lining.
Yeah. Now, just to go to another book that I came across, Mark, it's by a fellow called Eric Wilson, and it's called Against Happiness in Praise of Melancholy.
Yeah.
And he talks about this modern thing that you alluded to earlier of there being a happiness industry, you know, and a sort of a almost a demand that everyone be happy and have a great day. And so.
There's a great TED talk about extroverts and introverts, and the speaker in the talk describes going to summer camp and how the camp leader or the camp counselor was like, "Hey everybody, how you going?" And like trying to boost everybody up. Yeah. And although that was about extroversion and introversion, and I'm not saying that introverts are unhappy, but there is a sense that people that are upbeat like that can't understand why the rest of the world doesn't share their upbeatedness. And they don't need to be upbeat to be happy.
Yeah.
So that would there's a graph, I feel, or some research, the link between extroversion and introversion and happiness and melancholia.
Very interesting, mate. Yeah. I mean, people who are over the top, as an extrovert, can induce a fair level of unhappiness in me at times.
Yeah, that's right. Me too. Make me want to go and sit in the corner.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe the modern quest to annihilate melancholia in favour of forever being, in inverted commas, happy, is, you know, in need of a bit of recalibrating.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Now, as we move towards the end of our discussion today, I just wanted to introduce the topic of aesthetics.
Sure.
I mean, you're a thoughtful man and you appreciate it. And just sort of thinking about things such as interior design, open spaces, public housing, what are your thoughts on aesthetics and happiness?
I sit here in my comfortable chair and I look out at the grapevine that's just losing its leaves in autumn, and there's a gentle breeze blowing and the light's nice, and I think, yeah, aesthetically this is a very nice place to be. And then I think, well, imagine if I was in a bedsit and somewhere where I wasn't allowed outside for more than an hour a day, and then only to go down to the supermarket. I'd have to be looking quite deep inside myself to find happiness there, I think. So, possibly there is a big link.
Finding beauty in normal activities, and that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That might be a big key to happiness, do you think?
Yes, I'd agree with that. Finding beauty in normal activities, yeah.
So in terms of our discussion, we've had a fairly positive look at some negative things, really. and we've come out the other end being pretty happy about our lot in life. Is it fair to say, in summary, that the simple things in life may still hold the key to happiness?
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people are finding over these 4, 5, 6 weeks, that they are surprisingly happy. And that is just because of simple things.
Yeah. Well, look, Mark, talking to you and making these podcasts makes me happy. So thank you once again for your erudite contributions. And with that, I will say that they are my thoughts on happiness.
Thank you very much, Dave. Yes, makes me happy too.